Hey.
Is this working?
It's working. You are on. This is where you have to go.
Is this on?
so here's something that's been rattling around in my mind. I'm just going to throw it out there because I haven't actually published the little post I wrote up on it.
Okay.
But Rick Rubin.
Def Jam Records. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did you happen to see the? I posted a link to this video.
It's on Devour. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the upshot of it. Rolling Stone did a little mini documentary with him going back to his dorm room where he founded Def Jam Records.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's really neat. About the early days of hip hop, but he said something in it that just like made me pause, stop, mm-hmm. get out quote book, write it down, tweet about it. Like, okay, yes, this is it. So the problem. Oh, no.
What?
We're going to talk about this.
I know we are.
We already are.
We are. Okay. We're already talking about it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So you're like going to play this?
Of course.
Okay. All right.
We're talking about it. The only thing I was looking at was I was trying to figure out what the tweet was, what the quote was. That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay. All right. So the quote was, "Nothing that happened was intentional. Nothing. Everything was about trying to make something cool for our friends that they would like."
Interesting.
That right there. Mm-hmm. That right there. Is the world's most successful business plan.
Okay. No, I get that. So explain why you think that is.
All right. Here's the deal. I'm betting anything. You know, this is Rick Rubin, okay?
Uh-huh.
You know, Rick Rubin has not only pretty much, you know, was essential in the birth of hip hop across the nation. You know, ran Def Jam Records out of his dorm room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, like, yep. You know, the first several years of Def Jam, the business address was his dorm room at NYU. And he ran it out of there, and he used the mailroom at the dorm for his shipping department.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, that was his measurement of success. It wasn't about the record sales. It wasn't about the, you know, he was just trying to, he found this cool thing. He thought it was cool. He said, hey, I should put this on records. And, you know, so I can pass it out to my friends.
Yep. And he also did like some cool stuff later on with American Records and stuff with Johnny Cash. Like that album,
yeah.
I remember, like, I mean, Hurt, Johnny Cash covering Nine Inch Nails. Come on.
Yeah, basically, if you look at the rest of his career and you apply that statement to it, you're like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. It makes perfectly good sense. I mean, here's a guy who probably is still operating off of this simple driving premise. He's made millions of dollars. Sure, you know, he's – you know, relaunched and rescued the careers of, you know, living legends, not just Johnny Cash, but others, you know, Tom Petty and others. You know, not only one of the most respected producers in history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go to Wikipedia and you look at the discography of albums he has credit on, I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of albums. You know, he pretty much has shaped music for the past 15, 20 years.
Yep. He's reinvented a lot of stuff.
He has reinvented a lot of stuff. He's reinvented a lot of folks. He's reinvented a lot of genres.
He just produced Eminem's latest album too, I think, didn't he? I think he did. He was in the video, that's for sure.
Oh, well, then there you go.
He was in Berserk, I think, was the single. Because I know, yeah. I know, it's one of those ones that, and actually funny, the lyrics of that song is, oh man, what's the lyrics? Like, let yourself go berserk is then it's like about, but the go berserk thing that Eminem says isn't about like just going crazy. It's about like intent, like just going berserk on the one thing, which
yeah.
is kind of like what Rubin does, right? Like,
yeah.
you know, you know?
But in a very, you know, I mean, I love this idea that nothing about it was intentional. He didn't set out thinking, okay, I'm going to go out and, oh, I've uncovered this rap thing that's happening and no one's really recording it. And so I'm going to take it and co-opt black culture and make millions of dollars off of it.
Mm-hmm.
No. He was just like, okay, I got to find a cool way to share this with my friends and to find these guys that are out there playing the clubs and playing the parties and not getting any, you know, no one else is hearing them. Other people have to hear this. My friends have to hear this. And so I've got to figure out a way to make that happen.
Have you?
And he's still doing it.
Yeah. Have you?
He's still running his business that way.
Have you heard of Girl Talk?
The DJ? I have.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so exactly. There's another example. I'm sure he didn't go, how do I combine popular songs from the past with, like, how do I combine all these songs to make something so that I have a sustainable business model that will last for eons? I mean, he just went in and said, this sounds awesome. I want to, and I mean, heck, he doesn't even go by his, he uses a pseudonym on stage. And his, I mean, actually, it's funny. The reason I mention that is because when I was in St. Paul at your place, you know, before I was waiting, I think it was, I was just playing Girl Talk in the house.
Yeah.
Like, and it's cool stuff, right? Like, yeah. I mean, and so now the thing is, I think nothing that the results weren't, but the intent was to make something cool. If you have the intent to make something cool and you focus on that, and I mean, I don't mean like I am going to focus on this. It's just you just dive in. That's when I think, like you said, like that's when the magic can really happen, right?
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, granted, there are so many other factors that go in between, say, making the cool things for your friends and, you know, becoming one of the most successful producers in music history, right?
Luck would be part of that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Luck would be part of that. Timing would be part of that. Dozens of other factors would be part of that, most of them out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
But here's one thing I want to say about that, and that is that if millions of dollars and becoming famous is your intention, most of that and your definition of success, most of that is out of your control.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that, you know, that shouldn't be a measure of success. I'm just saying that shouldn't be the only measure of success. Right. And as a matter of fact, maybe you should start to measure success from a point that you do have some control over. And that is making cool stuff that your friends like.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
If you're a writer. Don't, you know, think about, oh, I'm going to become some famous author. Blah, blah, blah. Start with, you know, I want to write a book that I think my friends will think is cool.
Yep.
You know, I want to write something that I think is fun for my wife to read, or, you know, or my buddy to read, or, you know, what have you. If you're an artist, you know, make art for your house and for your friends' houses and that you think would look good hanging on their walls. Because if you start there, the chances are very good that your friends are just everyday people, like other everyday people. And if they like it, chances are good that other people will like it too. And not just some other people, millions of other people. And if millions of other people like it, then you just have to focus on how to get it in front of those millions of other people, put a fair price on it.
Can we talk about Dash Plus for a second? Because I think this falls into that. I think you made Dash Plus. That was something useful for you.
Right. Oh, and completely.
Well, and then others saw you shared it because you're like, hey, this is cool. This is how I move things forward without getting bogged down in minutia and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then also, here's how I keep track of and easily scan down a list to see what's been done, what hasn't been done, and where it is in the process.
So what's happened since then? You've got there's been an app created, which has helped other people, not just people who use the app, but the schools and the students and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So that's for those who don't know, David Mendels, who actually is the person who did the app, he just borrowed my system. I really had no input other than, you know, testing it and giving my feedback where it was warranted. So he did it, and he donates those profits to schools, specifically right now in Indonesia, because that's where he lives. He's got a program that puts iPads and learning materials, digital learning materials, into the hands of kids. It's called the School in a Box project, and basically, you know, an iPad with the right learning materials in a classroom can completely transform, you know, 30 children's lives.
So Dave saw that, thought it was cool, and built mm-hmm. upon it, and built upon yeah. it, and look at, like, I mean, even and the funny thing is that when you look at what Rick Rubin's done, I mean, he's continued to build upon and evolve his stuff as well, right? Like,
yeah.
something cool, take it, and he just keeps taking things to the next level. I never seen him, a visual of him, or at least paid attention until I saw the video for Berserk. And I'm like, who is that old dude that looks like, he looks like Brian Johnson from Comic Book Men. I'm like, who is that? And he's, and he looked badass. Like, he just, you know,
yeah.
he didn't look like a biker dude. Didn't look like he just looked, he honestly looked to me like Brian. If you watch Comic Book Men,
No.
Okay, so it's basically Kevin Smith's comic book shop. It's on AMC, and there's a guy named Brian Johnson who's there, and he doesn't work there. He just hangs out there all the time. And I'm like, he looks like this guy, and I'm like, this is amazing that this guy is. And again, I think that if you like, and a bunch of us are doing this. Like, look, Mike Hurley's created Relay FM, and it's something cool, and he did it. I mean. There's so much of that going on. And if your end game is to make focus on that thing that really you want to make, that's cool. Focus on the, I'm seeing money come in because of that, not because I wanted to make money doing that. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense. But at the same time, also, I think, you know, one of the problems with our culture is that we have held up money as yeah. perhaps the only totem of success. And in fact, I'd say that you know, the money is a byproduct of the actual success.
Right. Right?
It's not, you know what I mean? Like, the mm-hmm. success was achieved long before the money starts rolling in.
Well, and I think it's important for people who want to make something cool and be able to focus on that stuff is that they need to say, okay, well, how can I maintain a lifestyle that allows me to do that as opposed to living beyond my means so that I have to do something else?
Yeah, yeah.
Because right? that's a huge problem, too.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a big one. You know, it goes along with my axiom that I say often, which is that there's two ways to have more money. That is either to make more or to spend less, and only one of those is completely within your control.
See, it's funny, you know. Back to the quote. I obviously have had a podcast. By the time this airs, the work flowing will be no more. But I started this podcast not because. Let's face it, I was doing a lot already.
I didn't need to,
but I wanted to do something that I thought would be different. And I like doing this stuff. I mean, the fact that you and I, when we finally got to meet each other in person, I mean, it would have been great. And I saw you tweet out, we could have recorded several of our conversations in the bookstore. And, you know, I mean, there were so many spots that could be done. And for me, it was like, I just want to make this stuff because I like making it and I know other people like making it and I have fun doing it. And it's cool. Like the paper episode that I did for this one where, you know, I mean, I thought that was great. I love talking about that stuff. And that stuff wasn't getting served on that podcast necessarily, not because of, you know, it just wasn't the forum. And I'm like, I need a cool forum to do this. This is the cool forum. And I, you know, let's see what we can do. And okay, you know what? If people want to support it via Patreon, that's fine. If they don't, that's also cool because I'm just doing this because I enjoy doing it. And and people are listening. And
yeah.
And that's huge. And I think now, do you think Ruben frames his, like, do you think he just goes and says, "Oh, I'm going to frame my day to support the building of this stuff," or does he just use that as the, like, I've got to build this stuff and, "Oh, it's time to, like," do you think he frames it, or do you think he just kind of goes with the flow?
Well, I don't know. I mean, unfortunately, once you get to a certain level of, you know, of success, you don't really get much control over your day. I mean, seriously, I mean, it sounds sad, but it's true, right? You know, it's, you know, I was at,
at one of my wife's clients is a circus school, and Beatrix takes circus there.
Mm-hmm.
And the assistant to the founder and executive director was discussing something. I overheard her discussing something with somebody about, okay, so when is this happening? What's the date? And she was like, yeah, well, I already told Dan, he said that it was on his calendar. And his assistant said, no, you don't understand. It's not on my calendar. And I put things on his calendar. If it's not on mine, it doesn't exist for him. So tell me when the date is, and I'll make sure that he's there.
Wow.
And I think when you get to a certain level of success and a certain level of organizational size, whatever, I think that, unfortunately, you no longer have the time to even schedule your day, to even manage your own calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You have so many demands on it that you actually have to hire people to play basically firewall for mm-hmm. For you to have the time to do the things that you need to do. I have no doubt in my mind that Rick Rubin, gets up in the morning, looks at, okay, who's the artist I'm producing today? Terrific. What time do I have to be at the studio? Great. All right, let's go.
And that's pretty, and that's pretty much it.
And that's pretty much it. But I think that he probably has in the back of his mind, gosh, wouldn't it be great to make a record with insert, David Bowie or Mick Jagger or Izzy, Iggy Azalea or, whoever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, and that at least a big part of his day is also, the millions of other, recording artists that would love to have Rick Rubin produce their record and are, trying to approach him to do so. Luckily he's probably in a position where he can cherry pick, but I do think that it is my guess. I don't know Rick Rubin. I have no idea. It just seems to me, just based upon that interview and based upon what I've read of him and whatever, that he is still very much driven by, wow, wouldn't it be cool if, that's like, his mission statement.
He probably gets goosebumps every time he produces something awesome.
Well, exactly.
And there's nothing better. I mean, smiling, all that stuff. But I know there's moments, I'm sure you happen to, where you get goosebumps and it's like, like that. Like I just did, and it can be something as small as like a really, just kind of a great conversation that you're putting out there, or a well-written piece of material, whatever you want to put out there. I mean, I got to be honest, when you put the Strike Through System in the Cramped, I was like, yes, but it was, and I got goosebumps. but by the same token, and this is where I think the other aspect happens, where maybe intent does come into play, at least for me, is I'm like, okay, it's now, this thing is more real than it ever was before, because one of my friends thinks this is kind of cool. I know others have as well. Now I need to go, okay, how do I make this even cooler?
Yeah.
Like I want to make, and I mean, I've not really shared this too much, but I want to make like little PDFs, design them so that people could put them inside the different size notebooks that they might buy. So like a Field Notes or a Moleskine or whatever.
Yeah.
And like those kind of things. And someone's like, oh, well, you're going to put that behind. I'm like, nah, I'll give those away. Like why not? Well,
Anna Reinert of Well Appointed Desk, just was weeks ago on her site, put out these little downloadable lined page templates where, like 6mm widths, 7mm widths, 8mm width, mm-hmm. whatever, that you can print off in the different sizes, for different size notebooks. So for instance, if you are like me and you like blank notebooks, but you'd like to maybe put a lined page behind it so that when you write, the writing stays straight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Basically, to add lines to a non-lined notebook to keep the writing straight, but also to then be able to, take that sheet out and have a a blank page.
See, that's so simple. It's
right.
It's
so simple. She just gave it away. Yeah. That's like totally like changed my game in so many ways.
Well, every the bu- look
one
at
of my notebooks have them.
Look
right?
at the bullet journal. There's another. I mean, there's so yeah. many different. I mean, and now look what's happened with that. I mean, Ryder's oh got gosh. A campaign, and I mean, I've got the it's so
I'm just how can I figure out how to make I don't know tens of thousands of dollars off of Dash Plus. I gotta figure that out.
Well, I mean, and the Jesse from New Year, joking. They're doing the Week Dominator and stuff like that. Those.
And my friend Garrick swears by the New Year calendar. Yep. He's got several in his home. That
yeah, I've got. I just started using mine. I mean, the post I put in my newsletter this past week. I've already started to frame it. Like I've already started to put my year up there, and I that is my first point of contact when I'm like, what do I need to do for the rest of the year? I know I need to look at this calendar because mm-hmm. otherwise I'm going to overcommit myself, and all my sabbatical weeks are on there, and a big bright family vacation is staring at me in the face, which is so nice to see. But you know, I mean, yeah. so and my three words are up there. So I mean, there's lots of these little innovations that are really cool, and some of them are so simple. And I mean, think about it. I mean, back to the recruit. I mean. Johnny Cash singing Hurt.
Yeah.
So simple and so I mean, I've listened to both tracks. Obviously, I'm a big Trent Reznor fan. And I wasn't a big Johnny Cash fan. But as soon as I saw that song and the video, ugh.
Yeah.
Just the look. And I think, didn't his wife had just passed or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, June. Yeah.
And it's just like, ugh. But yeah. that's the, I mean, some, I just think that, if we spent more time making cool stuff, like you said, and your tweet making cool stuff for our friends that they would like sounds like a solid, successful business plan. I think ultimately that's where most people started out, a lot of people started out, and then some people just lost their way along the way.
Man, I want to run around to like every company I know and basically switch out their mission statement with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Seriously. Absolutely. Absolutely. Before I let you go, and you know, I think I want to do this more often for, I'd love to create like, and again, cool stuff friends would like, just like, the first conversation with Patrick Rowan. The second, we could do this like every couple months or whatever. And it could be like just the free flowing episode of the podcast that, you know, cause I don't think we have enough of those. Yeah. So I think that'd be cool. If we can you and I can each carve out a half hour. I just got to remember hit the record button when we start every single
just
time.
Send out your little meeting doodle thing. And you know, we'll just pick some dates now. And you know, just for the next 6 months, just throw some out there and let's just throw them on the calendar.
Absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
Do you know I'm a big believer in that whole calendar thing?
I know you are. We'll probably get more to that later. Hey, Baron Fig Apprentice, I just got mine. What do you think of them? I know you got a review, and I'll put that in
the notes. I've got a review up on the Cramped. For the price, the quality is very high.
Yeah, I know.
I am freaking amazed by the quality for the price. I mean, they're what, a buck cheaper than Field Notes, and they're really nice.
Yeah. Now,
people are going to be thrown by the size because they're kind of small.
Yep.
I'm a little bit used to it because I've used the Midori Passport size notebook before. So, mm-hmm. And I have really tiny handwriting to begin with. I don't know if it would become kind of my everyday sort of thing. I've actually recently been surprised on my everyday sort of thing. I think I may have made a final choice when it comes to pocket notebooks.
And you're going
to
share that on your blog, obviously.
Well, at some point. Yeah. I'm not sure about it myself yet. I need to settle into that idea, but I think I might have made it.
See, and I've still got my Field Notes. I've got these apprentices that have come my way, and then I got the Hobonichi planner, which
got back pocket journals, which are the Tomo River paper, Tomoe or whatever. I don't know. Brad Dowdy told me how I pronounce it. I forgot already.
Yeah.
You know, I've got all of these different ones, and out of them, I've picked a favorite.
That's good. That's good. So I'm looking forward to seeing that down the line. But Patrick, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Dude, thanks for having me. This is great. I could talk to you forever. So seriously, I'm going to be looking for that meeting doodle thing.
It's coming. It's coming your way right after we're done this conversation.
All right. I love you, Mike.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.